welcome to another I Decided podcast. These podcasts are all about having conversations with people who lived a little bit above ordinary. They decided to plan a life they want to live in or create a business on purpose. My name is Ian Edwards and I'm a business coach, and I take time each month to have a conversation with someone who I believe will be inspirational and encourage you to live a life above average. These conversations have been with some friends of mine, some clients that I've been able to work with, some people that I've met in different spaces, or they've just been some people that I've met on my travels, and I find them very interesting people and would love to have a conversation with them to find out what made their business successful or to find out why their life is making a difference. Thank you for taking the time to join us today, and I hope you come away from this conversation inspired to think about your life. So I hope one day I get to interview you and hear your story about how you planned a life you wanted to live in or how you bought your business on purpose. Grab a cuppa, sit back, enjoy this conversation that we have. Welcome, Janine, and thank you for being with us today. It's a pleasure to have you part of our I Decided series. I really appreciate you, and I appreciate your input into this, and I'm looking forward to sharing some of your experiences that will really help in our conversation today towards supporting our listeners to help them write their I Decided story as well. So welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, Ian. I'm very excited to be with you. We've talked about it for a while and known each other for longer. Yeah, I'm pleased to be here.
Thank you very much. So where I like to begin with when we start our conversation is, what was the first glimpse that you had about, you know, becoming a coach and moving away from being a head in education and a lead teacher, then a deputy principal, and moving into kind of a private practice situation, which was a fairly radical jump from being very secure in employment to thinking, oh, what the heck, I'll throw all that to the wind and I'll start my own show, you know, just make that big step. So what led you to want to be in your own practice?
I was at a point in my life where my children, who are now in their late 20s, were about to finish their schooling years. I could see that there was a light at the end of the tunnel for my financial drain on school fees. With that, there was a frustration in me, in my work role at the time. I didn't feel like I was being fulfilled. I didn't feel like my strengths were being utilized. I didn't feel like I was growing in the role. And I was seeing this same frustration in people around me, in the leaders that I was working with, that the frustration of not growing, not understanding where they needed to grow, making mistakes without really having any guidebook into how to be a leader. And so it was like a muddling around going on around me. I had always aspired to be a principal.
Okay.
I'd set up my life to be a principal of an independent school. And I got to the point where I was a deputy principal of an independent school. You know, you strive for years to get to these roles. You do all the study. I'd done graduate diplomas. I'd done master's degrees. I knew I could be a principal. I was ready. And I got to the role of deputy principal, and I'd only been in it for 3 years, and I was already bored and frustrated by what I was experiencing. So, of course, I started to apply for principal roles, but, you know, I wasn't quite, in their mind, 3 years as a deputy wasn't probably enough, but I also wasn't seeing the roles of principal and the schools that were coming up available at the time, where I really were going to meet this need that I wanted for growth and for clarity of, you know, what leadership is all about and doing things really well. I wanted to lead in a school and do it really, really well. And I couldn't see that.
What do you think some of the roadblocks in that were? What in the Five Keys to Successful Business Planning book that I wrote, there's one thing in there, the higher you climb the ladder of success, the greater the view there is of those you need to serve. If you're climbing that ladder and climbing and you're seeing more people you can serve, but you're frustrated in how you can do that, it's a very kind of confronting situation in your life. And you want to break through those barriers, but sometimes it doesn't seem like there is a breakthrough point. My
breakthrough point was I resigned.
Okay. And what were some of the typical barriers that you were kind of pushing up against to be able to
release the expression of what you wanted to do in becoming a principal, but found that you couldn't do it?
Yeah, I think I'm a person that likes, I know with my DISC profile, it says that I'm a person that likes some recognition, getting any of that.
Okay.
I also know that from my driving forces, I like to learn. And I wasn't being given that opportunity either. I'm also very intentional with how I work. I have a desire for people. I always believe in their potential and want them to become better. And I wasn't being able to do that in my role, even though my position description said all of that. But when you live the experience, it wasn't there. I was therefore looking for an alternate role that would give me those things. And when I started to apply for roles and was getting through, was really quite successful in my applications, but they just weren't quite the right thing for me. Yep. And in going through that process, I discovered, well, actually, the principal thing, it's actually not what I really want. What I really want is to address this frustration, address this need that I'm seeing in people around me where they don't know how to lead well. They haven't got people around them that can be role models that they can model themselves by. They haven't got the culture around them that allows them to really be emotionally safe, to try new things, to innovate, to grow, you know, whatever it is that their strengths are, and to be recognised for that. And so I resigned.
But you didn't resign yourself in the sense of kind of giving up. You more moved on in a way, from our conversations, I know that, in a way that you were ready to try a different idea, to try a different direction, to look at vocation as being quite deliberate, and then moving that into being self-employed.
That's right, yeah. So I decided that my real passion was in developing people rather than in running an organisation like a school and leading that strategically. It was in developing the people. And so I decided to start my own business, look at leadership development, designing programs that would provide the necessary foundation that I could see that people were missing. And so I started the business from nothing, resigned in the August, continued the job until the December, and started the business the following year. Took 6 months off to, was very fortunate in that my husband now, we got married that next year. He also had retired, so he had time. We did some traveling. We did the real estate thing, you know, the house changes and stuff. While we were overseas, I spent 2 weeks pretty much on the floor of the lounge room with all these notes around me, covered the whole floor with notes and pictures and mapping ideas. And that 2 weeks is what created the business. And mm-hmm. I came back and started it after that. Interestingly, I was just reflecting on that time with my husband and saying, I got my first contract. It was so exciting. I actually got a first job. Whoa. I thought it was a huge amount of money. Really, you know, like, wow, people are going to pay me this money to do the program. And now it equates to 3 days' work.
Yes.
You know, I'm now 8 years into the business, and that amount of money is equivalent to me doing 3 days of work, which is just incredible now how things have changed.
Yeah, it is. But it's that first contract, the first time you land something, the first time you move your glimpse into that little bit of a vision that you're going to pursue, and then someone else believes in you as well. It's such a boost. You feel authentic all of a sudden in this dream that you want to pursue.
That was great.
So who was the first person that you shared this dream with, this idea about being self-employed? And what was their advice and their thoughts and their feedback?
So obviously the first person was my husband, who was my fiancé at the time, taking on an incredible risk of first dating what he saw as a deputy principal with a regular salary and so on, and he's about to retire, and me then saying, no, throw it all away, I'm going to work for myself. How do you feel about that? I've always been financially independent and continue to be financially independent from him and anyone. And so I said, this is my financial risk. It's not your financial risk. And if it doesn't go well, I will just go back to being a teacher because I still have my registrations. And, of course, I can do that work. So don't worry about the money. I will look after myself. So I had to get that okay first.
Okay.
And he was incredibly supportive, as he still is. And he said, look, you know, I know you've got a really good work ethic. I know that you are determined to succeed. You have done with your career so far. I don't expect you'll be any different with this business.
Yeah.
And so I got the go ahead from him that, you know, the okay. And I also have two other very good friends who are great supporters. One who takes no rubbish. And so she has an expression that if I step out of line, her phrase is, I'll hit you with a wet fish. And so that, you know, is really good to keep me on the straight and narrow. And I've got another very good friend who doesn't accept the limiting beliefs that I might come up with every now and then. Okay. And pulls me up and reinforces the things that she knows I'm good at and now I'm realising I'm good at. So, yeah, been great supporters when I gave them the ideas.
Yeah, it's interesting. I often share with men when I'm talking with men's groups and things like that. One of the most important things we can have in our life is a friend who will tell us that we're being a bullfed when we're being a bullfed. You know, like, okay. So we need that honest person in our life, but we also need the encourager. We need someone. The word encouragement means promote courage. So we need that person in our life who will promote courage in us until we can find it for ourselves. It's an exciting idea that you had, but now that's ideas got to move from intangible to tangible. It's got to move from this, well, I can figure it all out in my mind and I want to sell a concept, but now this concept has to have some concrete in it. It's got to have something that I can take to somebody and actually explain what I do and what outcome that'll produce as a benefit towards you as an organization. And it's a big shift and a big challenge for anybody that's selling ideas and concepts or like selling the invisible. You've got to make it tangible. So how was that process for you and how did that unfold and what did you do?
Well, being a teacher, I'm good at the training side. I've got lots of years of experience of that and I'm comfortable talking to large groups. So my public speaking skills weren't an issue. My ability to put together a training program wasn't an issue. What was an issue was being able to sell it because that's a skill set I didn't have. And so I found that if I sold the product instead of selling me as the trainer, then I felt more comfortable because I was selling something that was tangible. And therefore, I could collect testimonials about that tangible outcome. I could see the results of that tangible outcome. When underneath, it was in fact me being the trainer, influencing, inspiring, motivating, skilling people up. And so that's been my model all the way along, is that I promote the programs that I deliver and the outcomes that come from that. I don't promote me. I think there has to be a transition that I get to that. That's my current work, I guess. I'll tell you a bit about that in a bit.
Is what we discuss is very skeletal. So it's got all the right bones to make you successful in what it is that you're doing, whether it be leadership development or reshaping an organization, change management, growth in your ability in like marketing or fiscal management or whatever part of the business is that you need to grow. This is very skeletal by nature, but if we've got a skeleton, we're not an amoeba. Therefore, we've got something to hang all these great ideas on and flesh out. And at the end, it's got a body. It's got a shape. And that shape's unique. And working with you for a long time, I could see that you were developing all those bones. You were developing that skeleton to be able to flesh out. So if we were to name some of the things that are in that skeleton, the benefit that you provide to people and allow them to hang their body on, What would be some of the key issues that you see in the scholastic program or schools or private schools in any way, shape or form that you bring great change and great benefit to allow them to restructure what they're doing and get a far better end result?
Okay. So, yes, we started to work together in 2018 and continued working for about 2.5 years together. And when we were working together in the early days, I had some what I saw, first of all, as disjointed different programs. Now, I don't call them coaching programs. They are leadership programs. Each of them has a coaching focus to it, hence the name of the company, Coaching Focus. So I teach, I do have a coach certification program, and each of my programs have coaching elements right throughout them. Those programs I didn't see as clearly connected until a little while later. I've now developed them into a consecutive growing leadership model. And the four areas are having great clarity about who you are as a leader, understanding yourself, how you prefer to lead other people, what are the issues and triggers for you that are going to cause you to lower your emotional intelligence response. The second part is being really comfortable in difficult conversations, so understanding conflict, understanding how you present in conflict and how you can manage yourself through using a framework. The other one is coaching, understanding what coaching is, having the skills and training to be able to coach in a formal sense, but also to use it as part of your general leadership style every day. And the fourth part is understanding how to lead in a strategic way, how to lead through change, how to create a vision for your team, how to lead through that vision and bring people along and move that team through a change project so that you achieve your strategic outcome. So those four elements, what I see as the main issues in leadership. Leaders don't think big picture. Quite often they're so busy in the day-to-day, they can't see the wood for the trees, so to speak. We talk about getting out of the weeds. You've got to get up higher in your thinking and see where you're taking your team. And if you aren't clear about where you're taking your team, then you're not taking them anywhere. You're just doing the day-to-day. So that's really important in leadership, that you are driving a vision forward. The coaching part is all about creating that culture where people are able to grow, where they're able to find their own solutions and be empowered to work things out themselves so that they feel like they have value and they are giving back value to the organisation, and creating that culture of trust, empathy, support. The conflict management part is our Australian population, 45% of our Australian population, and this goes into New Zealand as well, are what I call conflict avert. They're not comfortable in conflict. They're relationship people, and so therefore they'll avoid the conflict in any way they can, go around it, put it off, backdoor a conflict issue. And so if we are going to get more comfortable to have robust conversations where we're talking about the stuff, we're not talking about the people and we're not making it personal, then we've got to get better at conflict. We need to know who we are, the clarity piece, because if we're not clear about who we are, then we're not leading through our true self, and we're not able to manage and lead. Instead, we micromanage. So they're the things that I was seeing in leadership, and that's what I built my program around, to address those things.
Yeah, there was an expression I heard many years ago, and that is, the problem that we see in the world today is good leadership, and the answer is good leadership. And we need to develop and build good leaders so that they lead well. So many people are promoted to a level of leadership because of past success without being given any tools for future success.
So they're promoted based on their technical skills?
Yes.
They're the leader of the technical skills in the area, and therefore they assume that they can also lead, and that doesn't necessarily translate.
Yeah, well, it's very different leading, being a leader in skill and ability and engineering, and then moving that into a sphere where now you're going to be primarily managing people. There's a lot more complexities with managing people than there is things.
So you manage things, but you lead people.
Now, that's exciting. And I often see after you've done a conference that there will be a bit of a celebration on LinkedIn, and it'll some notices, and the feedback that I read on there is just beautiful, as the conversations you've had with people and the training and development that you've done with people has really transformed and changed their life. So congratulations in that space.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's exciting to see the feedback. Now you've run your first workshop, you've got to make this now into a bona fide business and start to set budgets and start to set plans and start to grow things out. And then that's all developing and it's starting to move well, and then you hit COVID. and the whole model of what you did had to change. Tell me about the impact that that's made into your life and your business.
Yes, so COVID, what a beautiful time that was for us. I'm in Victoria, Melbourne. We had a particularly interesting time with COVID. In Melbourne, we had 6 lockdowns across the time. So I experienced COVID, or it hit me and my business. I was driving back from Sydney to Melbourne. I just run a women's conference up there in Sydney, which was being impacted by COVID anyway because it was being delivered in a boarding school. And if COVID hit any of the students in the boarding school, we couldn't run the conference there and we had to have an alternate venue. So there's all of that mayhem of getting an alternate venue on the side just in case. And we dropped numbers for the conference. But it went ahead. It was all great. It was wonderful. My assistant and I were, beautiful assistant Liz has worked with me for 7 years and now has retired. Anyway, another story. We'll talk about that too in a bit. We were having breakfast after the conference the next day in a country town on the way back from Sydney to Melbourne, and looked outside the window of the coffee shop and everybody was walking past with huge shopping trolleys filled with toilet paper.
Yes.
And tins and, you know, food. And we're looking out and going, what on earth is going on out there? So we hurriedly finished our breakfast and went out to see what was going on and went to the supermarket. And it was chaos. Everybody was filling up their trolleys with everything. And we you know, quick, get a newspaper. What is going on? And, of course, it was COVID happening and we were going into these series of lockdowns. And so we drove back to Melbourne and in the trip back, my phone ran hot with every client that I had booked throughout the year ringing to cancel. And at the end of that trip, 10 hours of driving home, I had not one client for the entire year. And I was looking at my lovely assistant and I said to her, I can't even afford to keep you on. It was a very, very sad moment. And, of course, we didn't know what the government was going to do in terms of employment help and so on. But I spent the next couple of weeks sitting on the couch watching a whole lot of Netflix series, consuming probably way too much chocolate. But at the end of that time, I realised that I needed to transition online, get myself what I called a learning management system for my business, and learn how to do what we're doing now on Zoom or Google Meets and get myself ready. I thought, I don't know what's going on in schools. How can I help people in schools when I don't even know what's going on? And I started a weekly evening catch-up. We called it, I'm not even sure what we called it, but every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, I just had an open forum and educators would come online for an hour or an hour and a half and we would just share problems. We'd just talk about what's going on. Just that kept me in the loop. It also kept them together. They knew that I was still there for them. From that, work came in terms of one-on-one support for some of the senior leaders in schools of how to manage their own challenges themselves in a public forum when they're being given the news by our government at 11 o'clock on a Sunday and they have to make sure that school's running quite calmly from the Monday onwards. It was all the very last minute stuff and a lot of meltdown and people knew I was there. And so I picked up a lot of one-on-one work with senior leaders in that. And then when people knew that I'd gone online and I was starting to run some things online, little workshops here or there, I then transitioned all of my regular work to online, including my women's conference, which used to be a two-day full workshop. I split it up into little bite-sized blocks across a week. I ended up turning things around so much that my turnover across the main two COVID years was 1.5 times my normal trading income.
It's a matter of doing things differently. I think one of the key words throughout whole of COVID was pivot. We had to learn how to pivot and change. But yeah, if we didn't change and we didn't grow and we didn't adapt, and so many of my clients we would talk through all different ideas about how to do it. They were very, very successful in that period rather than being devastated. Their businesses actually grew. in that time because they just thought differently and they didn't give up and they tried different ideas and they figured out how they could help others. That was one of the key things. Everyone who reached out to help other people, their businesses grew. You know, it was very exciting. You had to be bigger than the problem you faced.
Yeah, and there was a lot of things I didn't know. I had to reach out to people to help me get trained in various new software, do lots of automation was required. So a huge amount of learning, but incredibly successful as a result. And so I've now used I've maintained some of that still in my business model now. So I do still a lot online that allows people who are in outside of the main city, Melbourne, to access me more easily, and little schools here and there. I have people from New Zealand also accessing me online. So it has grown my reach quite a lot. It was probably Melbourne, Victoria. Now I'm Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful because your content is so rich in so many different areas that it is, I mean, it's good for anybody across Australia and New Zealand. So do you think that was your greatest challenge that you've had to overcome in the business, or there's some other challenges that you found yourself, what do I do here in those spaces?
Well, my number one challenge still remains me as an individual because I'm still working out how to promote myself. This whole belief in what I do is still something I have to get over. So that's my number one challenge, and it still stays with me. The second one was COVID. It was a tremendous time. Now there's more challenges are coming up now because in schools, and that's I only work with schools, and I primarily work with independent schools, not government schools. We've got issues with payroll tax now with the government. So that's going to impact the finances of schools. We still have COVID quite heavy in schools, and that means that people are needing to be covered when they're ill. We have a shortage of teachers within the workforce. So, you know, finding a replacement for somebody or cover, somebody to come in and cover is really hard. So my work in professional development for teachers, they've got to be covered if they're going to come and work with me. There's all these things in the background which are out of my control, but if I'm going to stay viable, I've got to find ways around that.
Okay.
So this means that my work has traditionally been within work hours. Maybe I need to be running programs that are outside of work hours, which goes against my model of work-life steadiness, if you like, not necessarily balance, but...
Work-life harmony.
Work-life harmony, yeah, lovely. In the independent system, educators will work outside of hours and they will go to PDs.
Okay.
So it's kind of meeting that need so that the schools can still continue.
Change is dynamic. It's constant. A business can never sit static. The rest of the world continues to change even if we stop. So we need to stay current and relevant. We need to make sure our content is rich, but also our approach to marketing, our approach to whatever the next stage is, stays on the cutting edge.
So that's my challenge. So to deal with the number one challenge, which is me, I have decided to write a book. So the book allows me to document my knowledge and my thoughts and some of that rich content you're talking about in my programs, but will place me firmly in a position of authority.
Okay.
Because I've written a book. And so... therefore, that's my way of getting past challenge number one.
Whenever there's an artist, an author, somebody who's moving into like a technician, the most exciting part of beginning this journey is adding now all these concepts and ideas and putting all these ingredients into something that becomes reality. The hardest part of that journey is knowing when there's enough and when to stop. And I've spoken to a few artists and authors and others who are in the creative field and sculptors. When I've talked to them, they say, oh, yeah, it's easy to start because you've got this blank canvas and you start adding and adding and adding. The hardest thing to do is to know when to stop, when there's enough there and enough content. And I know I know that very, very much from my own book, The Five Keys to Successful Business Planning. I do a revision on that every year, knowing that it's complete. And refining it is probably a little bit different to getting that first edition down where you start to say to yourself, yeah, there is enough in here. Yeah, you will find that challenge. And when you get to it, you think to yourself, okay, now am I there? Am I not there? Or, you know, like, oh, I probably should add this into it. So one of the key things will be to, as you do your review, to know when you're right. This is enough. This has got enough stuff in it. Have some good editors and some good critiques around you so you can find that spot.
I'm building my support wall.
Good.
Which is one of your phrases.
Yes.
In this new community of writing a book. This morning before this session, I was writing, doing a writing sprint, they call it.
Yes.
In my book writing community. So it helps you to keep yourself in the flow.
Yeah, and you'll find inspiration comes to you, yeah, day, night, in the midst of a conference, in the midst of a conversation. I encourage everybody, if they're thinking about writing a book one day, and I firmly believe inside everybody there's a book. Someone said to me, are you ever going to write the story of your life? And I jokingly said to them, I said, yes, I've already got the title. And the title is going to be Not That Anybody Would Be Interested. but it's fun to, and even now that we're grandparents and talking with my kids about life, there's this book inside of us. I'm sure there is, and I'm so excited to be reading your book when that comes out.
2024.
Very good. You got a deadline or finish line. That's a great place to begin with, because it keeps you in tune and on track.
That's right. And the other challenge I have is that I want to work in more places in Australia and New Zealand. And so that means I need to be able to work from those locations as well as deliver my programs in those locations. And so I mentioned before, my beautiful assistant Liz is not with me anymore. And so I'm going virtually to an assistant,
okay,
so that I can be in all different places around Australia and New Zealand and still be working, and the business is running quite smoothly. So we're in the process of doing automations, lots of automations, working with Process Culture is the company, Peter, and my VA, and let's see where that takes us.
So exciting times ahead. What's one of the main things that you've learnt over your coaching business life that you would pass on to somebody who's just about to enter into that field?
I think you have to realize that it can be a 7 day a week existence, especially initially, because you've really got to get the hamster wheel running on the hamster wheel. You've got to get that turning, you've got to get the momentum, and that takes a fair bit of effort. So you need to be working in something that you really love, so it doesn't feel like work. Doesn't feel like work to me every day. I can sit at my desk and do things, and I'm loving what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't drain me. So you need to be picking something that is your passion, that you really are willing to give lots of time to. And you also have to believe in the thing that you're doing, that it's going to make an impact. And believe in that. And that belief, however you get it, whether you start collecting testimonials early or whatever, but you've got to have that belief to keep you going. So what would I say to somebody who's starting out? Yeah, find something that you love and believe in it. Get your support wall, Ian Edwards' support wall suggestion, very great, good thing. Be deliberate in your actions. So one of the things you taught me, Ian, was to block out time in my calendar so that I was purposefully working on particular things. And that purposeful work is probably on marketing.
Okay.
How are you going to share your message, and who are you going to share your message with? Design your process, do it really well on a small scale, get that right, and then you can take it a bit bigger.
With all the clients that we've worked with over the years, and we've worked with nearly 300 people now, I see it in their eyes, and then I see it in their life. There's a difference between someone having a vision and the vision having them. And it's this little transitional point where no longer can they just put it down for a little while. It's constantly moving around inside their mind and being refined, and it's constantly looking at better ways to do something or more ideas you could add into it. And while it's a 7-day event that happens, there is still a real need to capture the time for replenishment, to put margins in your life. And you and I both as coaches, we're encouraging people all the time that they need to find that life harmony. The way we put it in our business is to plan a life you want to live in through a business on purpose. With your company, I know with the coaching focus side of things, it's been very much about finding that harmony of life between role, responsibility, and relationship. So those three things have had a beautiful synergy in their lives, and they don't get all consumed about their role and lose out on relationship, and they can still manage those three primary areas of life. You've shared a little bit about what next. You've shared your journey with us, which is wonderful. How long do you think you'll keep doing this for?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure how long I'm going to keep doing this for. I can't see an end at the moment because I'm loving what I do.
And doing what you love.
I think probably I possibly could keep going another 10 years. Who knows? Maybe 5, maybe somewhere between 5 and 10, let's say.
And how would you create a succession plan of what you've done so that either you can hand that on to somebody else, inspire somebody else, or let all the research, development, and beauty of what you've begun transfer onto another generation?
Yes, I would have to take some people into the company and train them up if I was going to continue the work and on-sell it, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's possible. You never know what that might could be another iteration.
Well, I think your book will inspire people. So the book that you write will probably start that glimpse in somebody else's life that one day will find its fruition in a passion to continue on the work that you're doing.
But I have people who come to me and say, I'd like to work with you. And, you know, there are people out there in the ether and they know who they are. People who I'm keeping in contact with because yeah. You never know what might happen. There's people that I'm mentoring as well because I'm charged by the hour, but I mentor for free. There's just a handful of people that I'm mentoring and I'm mentoring them. I want them to be very successful, but
yeah.
I have a little plan in mind as well.
Good. Yeah, there's so much fun in collaboration. And when you get a bunch of like-minded people who are intuitives and they're, you know, they can see that same vision that you have and collaboratively they want to see that grow out across the industry that you're in, and that's when change really begins and you start to see some really dynamic leaps. Mm. At the end of each conversation that I have with people, I'll mention one day your life is going to be reduced to a sentence and maybe a paragraph, and they'll say something about Janine. What would you like that sentence, that paragraph to say?
Yeah, okay. So this resonates a little bit with me with my funeral, what people are going to say for my eulogy. Bring it down to a sentence is a little bit tough, but I think, and I hear this from people that I work with, that I inspire them. That I'm really a motivator. I believe in their potential and I want them to achieve what they want. And so I think my sentence might be, Janine always wanted the best for, and if you're reading it for me, wanted the best for me.
Mm-hmm.
She believed in me and she inspired me to be whatever it was that I wanted to be. So you have to probably change the grammar for it to be written as a one sentence. If you're reading it on your tombstone, I am a person who inspires, who motivates,
yeah.
helps you to see what you can't see and wants the best for you, whatever that is.
It was a real pleasure when we were working together in coaching, Janine, and the few things that I really admired about you was that you never stayed down for long. You might get hit, but you got up again pretty quick. you also didn't want to face problems. You wanted to find solutions. So the problem was soon evaporated in the wake of a solution that you would find. You do very much inspire people. You inspired me. While I was coaching with you, you inspired me to really be the best I could be as a coach as well. One of the things that I was told when I was beginning my journey of business 40 years ago, someone said to me, make a living and a difference. What I've watched about your life and the people you serve, the people you support, and the people you help and grow, you've made a living and a difference, and you've left an impact. It's going to keep just a ripple effecting out into the community that you primarily coach in and work with, and there will be a lot of beneficiaries over the years from the leadership development and training you're doing with the leaders that you work with, but then also all the people that they support. So the impact of your life has got a ripple effect over all the private schools and communities across Australia and now New Zealand. So congratulations on what you're doing.
Thank you, Ian, and thank you for your support. For the people listening, I worked with you, Ian, for about 2.5 years. COVID ended up stopping that, unfortunately. You know, income took a hit. I really benefited from some of the important messages that you gave me. I mentioned blocking time, I've mentioned the support wall, but you also were really clear about what the planning side, making sure that I planned out what I was going to do and had a clear focus. And I've kept many of those learnings with me in the work I do every day.
Well, it was a privilege, a real privilege. Like anything in any part of business, when the going get tough, the tough get going. You didn't drop it all from one model because that model didn't work. You pivoted and you found a new model, and that's just taking you to whole new layers of success. So I wish you all the very best in the future. I wish you much success in this both models now that you have the ability to do. And thank you for changing the world in your space and making our schools, our private schools, such a better place. So
thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you.